Meet Sven.
Yeah.
He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's September 17th, 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Hey, do you assume when I say internet, it's worldwide? I mean, that's pretty much worldwide, right? Internet's worldwide.
Well, I don't know. They may not have internet in the, you know, like Southwest Australia, you know, out where the Aborigines are, right?
That's true. So I guess I should just say on the internet then.
You know, unless they're hijacking a connection from Perth or somewhere.
They got their little MiWi hotspot going.
Right,
in the,
exactly. Yeah, yeah. You know, hey, they're creative people out there.
That's true. That's true. Hey, have you ever played in a multi-day tournament?
Yes, all the time. You know, I have 7 World Series under my belt, a couple of World Poker Tours, and, you know, a Madden 99.
Well, I guess the more effective question would be, have you ever survived to the second day of a multi-day tournament? How's that?
You know what? I don't believe I have off the top of my head. So, no, I'm going to go with no.
Okay.
And even if the answer was yes, I don't think it really changes where you're going. So,
well, you remember last week you and I entered a charity tournament, and it was in between, so we couldn't really tell how I did.
Right, exactly.
So I ended up going back for day 2 of the tournament. I was pretty excited because as soon as I walked in the door, they're like, everybody's in the money, because we weren't really sure if we were going to be in the money. I was a little nervous, you know. I mean, I knew I had 48 big blinds, and I was going to be in the money. I wasn't really too worried about it, but there were 13 players left. There were 2 tables left. And I was afraid they were going to be like, you know, just the final table gets paid. So that's, you still have to survive a pretty decent amount of time. So I go there, and it was really cool. I was hoping for, like, the plastic bags, you know, and you dump your chips out and sign a thing, you know. Of course, when I get there, the stacks are already in front of everybody and just got to show your ID or whatever. But they knew who I was. So, and I sit down, and I see I have 48, you know, 1,000 chips. And I'm like, the big blind when I quit was... Well, it was 500 and 1,000, and the ante was like 200. And I'm like, all right, man, this is awesome. I go, I'm ready. I'm going to win this thing. And then I look up at the screen, and it says 13 players left, and it says blinds are 3 and 6,000 with 1,000 ante.
Oops.
And I said, oh, they got to fix that. I got to correct that. That was probably what they reached last night, you know, because I played in the day 1, and there was one shift left, one flight left, so they'll have to just, you know, roll it back to, you know, whatever. And so I'm just, you know, it gets closer and closer, and then it's not getting changed. And I'm like, dealer, is that right? And the dealer says, no, that's not right. They have to fix that. Don't worry. I'm like, oh, shoo, because there's just no way I can go from 48 big blinds to 16 big blinds just like that. And then I'm pretty much in almost shove mode.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, you make a raise, it's 18,000, 15,000, that's a third of my stack. And so I'm like, all right, so then they get the tournament director, and nope, that's where it's going to be. I said, what do you mean that's where it's going to be? How can that be? When we quit my shift, it was 200 ante, 500,000. He said, well, one of the flights made it that far, so that's where we're going to start it. And I said, well, that doesn't make sense. There are 4 flights, right? So... you're punishing 3 flights to satisfy 1 flight? And, you know, I don't care if they have an advantage. You need to roll it back because, you know, that's where we were. And I'm going from 48 big blinds to, like, 15 or 16. My M is, like, you know, whatever. So he goes and talks it over with the head guy, and he was like, yeah, no, it's what we got to do because we've already, you know, we've already stacked the chips up, thousands, we've cashed them all in. The antes would have to roll back to a 500 ante or a 100 ante or whatever it was and have to re-give out chips and everything. And then there was another reason he gave, but it just, I was like, well, why can't you just roll it back? And, you know, and they're like, no, you know, it's a charity tournament, it's two tables left, and, you know, we need to get it moving. And so I went from 48 big blinds to 16, Scott. How do you handle something like that?
I shove. And then go home and grumble. Damn charity tournaments. That's why you don't play them.
Oh, man.
Why I don't help the kids out. They're always messing with me.
Yeah, but I mean, you still have 16 big blinds. I don't think I'm shoving yet.
I was joking. I mean, obviously, you adjust your game according to it, but... Well, you know, it's tough, but, you know, this is kind of, I guess it's kind of akin to getting coolered on the river.
Yeah.
And, you know, your ability as a poker player is to adjust to the situation and, you know, put your anger in check and focus on the new, on the next hand. So, I mean, I guess that's probably how I would approach it, saying it on a podcast. if I'm actually in the room, I probably would have reacted much differently. But that's the stock professional answer I'm going to give you.
Well, you and I have heard, even here in Florida, they had that Florida Million tournament. We've heard of, you know, when this is the difficulty of running a multi-day tournament is when, if you're not, cutting it off at a set time frame, you know, like the Florida Million here, they cut it off at when it got to 10% of the field.
Right,
so their
right.
blinds could have varied, and they had it in six different locations around the state, so they rolled it back. I don't know if they rolled it back two levels or they rolled it back to an agreed level.
I think they rolled it back to the last level completed by the lowest level.
Yeah, which I totally agree with.
Yeah, and I do remember talking to one of the organizers that there was a discussion about whether to do that or not, because as you mentioned, this is the difficulty in running a multi-day tournament, probably why you don't see a lot of multi-day tournaments except on the big level,
right?
Like World Series and World Poker Tour, and, you know, World Series can do it because they just cut it off. Everybody plays the same amount of levels, and they just take whoever moves on.
Yeah.
But there's disadvantages to that as well, too. So I guess it all depends on how you want to do it. And in the Florida Million case and the charity tournament that you played, they decided to do a percentage move on. And if you do that, then you get into the same situation where people are at different levels. And you have to decide what's best for the tournament. Now, you know, I get it. A charity tournament, you don't want to expend a lot of time and effort doing a charity tournament. So I can give them a pass. $30 tournament, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously if this was a bigger buy-in, not for charity, I think there probably would have been some bloodletting had it not been... rolled back, but no, again, that's why you don't see a lot of multi-day tournaments. I don't think, I guess they're just a pain in the patootie.
Yeah, and then I think
can I say patootie?
I think we could say patootie, except for in the Aboriginal area of
Australia.
Okay. But the thing about it is, you know, if it was the Florida Million, that's why they had to roll it back, because there would have been some blood-curdling screams when people walked into Derby Lane and found out that they were playing at, you know, their blinds went from, you know, a whole 100% to 33%. It's just very difficult to see past that. And you're right. This is like a $30 tournament. A lot of people rebought, so for some people it was a lot more than that.
Oh yeah, right.
But you know, I adjusted and I finished like fifth or seventh or something, and I won like, you know, five times my buy-in or whatever it was. So I was happy. I made the final table and did well, and I was only there for, you know, a couple of hours or whatever, but. I've never had that happen to me before, because I never played in a multi, and I was starting to wonder if they were right and I was wrong, but I know that, you know, it just, and then somebody, like I said, one of the dealers, I think, said to me, no, this makes sense though. And I was like, why? He said, well, cause in the World Series, day 1A sets the pace, and whatever they do, that's what it is. And I said, no, that's not true.
That's
all
right.
We all know that all the days run for the same amount of hours. And so, and he may have been thinking of something else or maybe a different tournament. I don't know. But, yeah, it was a tough pill to swallow, but then I remembered, hey, duh, this is charity, and, you know, you're a bounty in this charity as a pseudo-celebrity, so just, you know, make sure you're cool, and I was cool.
You know, it also gets into some of the poker strategy you don't read about in books in these multi-day tournaments. There are people that kind of try to pick which day or flight is most advantageous to their game.
Yeah.
You know, I know when last time I was out at the World Series, a lot of the good solid brick and mortar players entered the World Series main event on Sunday because they knew that's the big day for online tournaments, and most of the young guns, the aggressive types, were not going to play on Sunday, so they could play the online tournaments at night.
That's
it's kind of a funny thing to think about, but it made sense. And I'd imagine that's the same. Obviously, that was the same thing in the Florida Million down here. People were trying to figure out, you know, which room was going to draw the most people and where they wanted to be. In your particular case, I mean, you can't predict which flight is going to go longer. I mean, that's really the issue here.
But I did pick Tuesday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon because I figured all the good players were sleeping at that point. So that was why
I picked Monday night because it was Labor Day, and I wanted a fuller field because I do better in a fuller field. And that means there's more chips on the table that I take to the next day. So that was my strategy going. So I guess I did put a little strategy into it. As it turned out, my flight was you know, about the same as the other ones. And the first flight was much bigger, which was probably the one that drove this one, right?
Yeah.
So I missed on mine. I had the right day, wrong time. How's
that? Well, the thing about this tournament was, you know, not just my blinds were a casualty of it. The other casualty was I couldn't play in Apes.
Yes, yes.
Because I was in this charity tournament, it threw my schedule all off, and I just didn't get into Apes. But you did. You played.
Yeah, yeah, and the real travesty for you was not being able to watch me make a move with top pair weak kicker against a guy who flopped a set.
Oh, God, that's brutal.
That's pretty tough to beat. that's like runner, and that's what happened to me. I just, you know, I was playing all right. I was just kind of a little in a funk and stuff, you know, getting some work done and stuff, and you know, finally people were playing back at me. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take a stand. And of course, every time you say, I'm going to take a stand, crawl into the coffin and put your suit on and, you know, showtime. Cause you know, you're going home.
Yeah.
And, so I was on the button with Queen Jack and, I think I raised it, with a bunch of limpers. So I raised and then the flop came Queen High. The guy bet into me and I'm like, you know what? I think you missed that flop. And I didn't, so I'm going to put you to a test. And of course, he's probably still cackling because his name now is bus driver because he took me to school. I did not make a splash, as I have not made in any Apes this year. I can't believe it is September now, and I have not cashed in one Apes event all year.
Man, it's crazy.
Pretty brutal. Pretty brutal. But another all-star final table. Our good friend and Andy Up forum moderator Gambit727 won another banana. He topped Edward M111, who has 47 bananas, and that was probably a very good final table to watch. Of course, I was you know, upset that your charity tournament did not go out well, so I did not watch the end.
It's two bananas for Gambit, one in Omaha 8, I believe, and then now the Nolan Hold'em. So he's starting to spread it around. He's a five-tool player, as they say.
He's a five-tool player. You know, and I went to a baseball game with him about a week or so ago before this event, and he was telling me he actually made, like, a trophy case for his banana, which is awesome.
That is great.
I just hope he made it big enough to squeeze the second one in. Plus, he's got a zipper right here in my office that he won that... Zoreg sent to me. I still haven't got to him. I forgot to take it to the
zipper.
Game. Sorry. So, you know, he's got some major hardware there over in Seminole, Florida.
Man, that's awesome. Unbelievable. And Edward M111, I mean, really, you're just embarrassing us now. I mean...
Yeah, and I played against him in zips last night. He was pretty short stack for a while and then ended up going on a tear, and I got knocked out in fourth. And I don't know whether he actually went on to win or not, but zips are getting a little bit tougher too. So check those out on Wednesday nights if you can. But the next Apes event is coming up Saturday, September 25th at noon. It is Pot Limit Omaha 8. So watch out, Gambit's on the crawl again. Notice I said crawl instead of prowl.
Yes, I noticed that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just it's my little subliminal dig at him. So. Win this. And of course, on this Saturday, September 18th at noon, is your shot to win your way in. It is a free roll.
And where can they do it?
top 10 seats get in. And it's always on Poker Stars. And get all your information at antiupmagazine.com/apesAIPS. And let me just repeat that about 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 more times. Because even on Wednesday, the last Apes event, hey, what's the password? And I recognize these people as listeners. I'm like, come on, you're killing me, folks.
Yeah, it's not like they're poachers, you know.
Right, they're cities from Guadalajara, Mexico, that I know you're just trying to get in. But, you know, when you're from the States, you know, come on, listen. Here we go. Slowly, I'll pause even. Go get a pen, pencil, highlighter. You don't have any of those? Needle, prick your finger so you got some blood coming out. AntiUpMagazine.com. Wait for it. /AIPS. Okay, got it? Good. Go there. Our schedule's there. Our password's there. My screen name's there. Chris's screen name's there. All these questions that I got in the last week. It's killing me, Chris.
Man.
Killing me.
Man, we've only been doing the show for, I don't know, 5.5, 6 years now?
Yeah. Wow. Crazy. Well, you know, hey, I got on a plane. We did the show early last week. Got on a plane, go up to Columbus, watched Ohio State rip the helmets off Miami Hurricanes. Always nice to take the helmets off of the Hurricanes before they get a chance to take them off themselves. Zing!
Plus, you can identify them in the lineup, too.
it was a great Ohio State game, but you know what? The other part of the trip was going up and seeing my cute little niece and nephew, and you know, I know you got your little step grandkids that you play with all the time and they have fun, but I don't get to see my niece and nephew quite enough. So when I get up there, I like to play some games with them, right?
Right.
And you know, I took a little poker lesson out of my gameplay with these 4 and 5 year olds. And lest anybody thinks that I'm picking on poor little Ellie and Noah, I'll have you know that they both spank me in Wii bowling. Four-year-old Noah has a broken femur. He's in a cast and beat me at Wii bowling. All right, so it's not that I took advantage of these kids in these other games. They certainly took wailed on me when they had a chance. All right, but you know, I was playing this game, Guess Who, with my niece. Right?
Yeah.
You ever played this?
Maybe a different variation of it, probably, yeah.
You essentially, you have a little picture of a guy or gal, and then you have to, like, ask generic questions of your opponent about their person. Kind of like Battleship, right?
Yeah.
Hey, does your dude have glasses? No. Okay, then you take, you have this big screen of people, and you put down, if they don't have glasses, you put them down. So, process of elimination, you get down to who the person is. First one to get it wins, right?
Right.
All right, so you're supposed to ask these generic questions, but then I'm like, you know, after a while, I'm like, you know what? I think I can, I think I can angle shoot here against my little niece. And so instead of asking, does your person have a green shirt? I would say, what color shirt does your person have?
Oh, very nice.
Wasn't it? I thought that was killer.
Oh, very nice.
On a tear, she had no chance. I won like 4 games in a row. And so the poker lesson I took out of this is, you know, you find yourself often, not often, but sometimes you'll find yourself in poker against opponents where you're heavily overmatching them, right?
Right.
They're beginners. Maybe you're stuck in a 2-4 game at a casino waiting for your 5-10 or, you know, 2-5 no limit to open up, and you're playing against people that that clearly you are generally superior to. And it can get boring, right?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
So I guess what I took out of this is, like, you know what? I'm gonna work on my game here. I'm gonna do some stuff. I'm gonna toy with these people, kind of like, you know, a cat with a mouse, right? And I'm not advocating people go out and toy with people, because we all had to learn somewhere, and it's not fair to kind of pick on us just because you're bored waiting for your game. But I think there is some things you can work on in your game if you take that approach.
Like asking the player, okay, is your card a diamond?
Like taking your chips across the line and go, oh, wait a minute, I didn't mean to do that. And then have somebody go all in, and then you go, ha, ha, yes, I did. No, I'm not talking about angle shooting. But, I mean, poker is such a social game, right? It's such a game of reading players and figuring out their tells and stuff. So in a game like that, why not work on that kind of stuff and see how you can manipulate players in a game where it's of no risk to you? So when you get into that bigger game where you're the one being manipulated more often, you have more skills to kind of prevent it.
And recognize it.
Yeah. See how I turned that around? I made a negative into a positive, I think.
You're no longer invited to my house when my kids are
Come on, I'll bring the guess who. Be sure they have a minimum of $50. I don't play. I don't buy in for anything less.
Well, you know, I think I had a similar experience. I told you earlier in the year, maybe last year, but you know, when the granddaughter was down and we were playing poker, or we were playing. It was like Go Fish, and I could tell she matched her card or something, and her face would light up, and she had all these tells. So I watched her carefully for the tells that she had, and then would use them at the poker table when people had the same kind of tells, but moderately. You know, not as so expressive or whatever, but yeah, it's the same kind of thing. Kids can teach you a lot, you know, because they're totally honest. You know, they're not deceiving at all. And no, I think that's true. I think you could just, as long as you're not. That's kind of what I do when I play online. I play limits that are, people would laugh at the limits I play at online. Right. But I do it to just try different things in my game, and not necessarily tells and stuff, because obviously we're online, but. But yeah, I try different strategies or different tactics and watch who will play and try to, like if I'm playing stud 8, work on my memorization of what cards were out and things like that, because hey, I'm going to lose 5 cents on this hand or whatever it is. So, you know, yeah, I totally agree with that.
All right. And should I feel bad? I mean, obviously I should feel bad for cheating my niece.
Yes.
But should I feel bad, you know, messing around with somebody in a 2-4 game?
No, I don't. No. Yeah, they're adults and they're sitting down with money and... That's no way. I mean,
that's what I like about you. This is what I like about you. Everything else, that's I can take or leave. But that's what I like about you. You have no problem with me. Adults, that's right, man. Just brutalize them.
Hey, you're an adult. You're sitting out your money. You're fair game. As long as I'm not cheating, what am I harm am I doing? Working on my game and taking your money.
Totally agree. The other thing we can agree on is that we love when we get feedback from our listeners.
Yes.
And got not one but two calls this week from folks commenting on last week's show. And, of course, the first one is picking on me. So we'll just skip that, not play that.
No, that's something I would do.
All right. That's right. Okay. So let's listen to this first one from this person who doesn't host a podcast, doesn't know how hard it is.
This is Tom McDonald up in Raleigh, Massachusetts. Just listening to Friday's podcast, just the first 15 minutes or so, and you mentioned about running into those two older gentlemen from the Muppet Show up in the balcony, and you thought their names were Mortimer and Johnson. Unfortunately, that's not correct. They were known as Statler and Waldorf, just to keep the record straight and keep your cultural references on the right track. So there you go, but enjoying the story very much. You guys keep up the great work, and talk to you next time. Thanks.
See, now, I was thinking that I know you were mixing up the, you know, the coming to America and the trading places guys, Mortimer, and those are the two old dudes from those movies. But I still thought it was funny as hell. And the funny thing, too, Scott, is right after that show, I watched a repeat of Family Guy. And they made a reference to when one of the guys, one of the Muppet guys is missing. The other guy's like, hey, this stuff ain't that bad when you watch it alone, you know, or something. And I just thought, oh, my God, those are the Muppet dudes that Scott was talking about on the show today. It was hilarious.
Well, here's the thing. In my defense, I wasn't trying to be accurate. I guess I should be in my jokes. You know, gosh, I didn't know there was, like, a screening group out there that, you know, fact-checking humor on podcasts. But no, I didn't know it was Mortimer. In fact, actually, what drove me more crazy about that is Johnson. That doesn't make any sense at all. I was searching very quickly for another traditionally old man name.
Traditionally old man name.
I should have came up with, like, Wilbur or something like that. But no, the first thing that came to my mind was Johnson. And I felt like I let the nation down. Mortimer and Johnson. That just doesn't make any sense. It's not funny.
Oh, it's funny now, though. A week later, we're getting some mileage out of it.
So I appreciate the feedback. It made my failed attempt funny. So score another one for the listeners. I love you all.
Well, our next one comes from Greg in Colorado. I love hearing about all these states far away from us. Is Colorado even a state? That's awesome.
All the way in Colorado. Golly, gee. You got to take the train to get there.
This is great, man. This is great.
Oh, man. Come on, dude. You're killing me.
Yeah, but he's got a funny story about poker, husbands, and wives. Let's hear it.
This is Greg from Colorado. I just listened to the podcast and heard Scott's question about poker stories involving wives. One of the best ones I heard, I was sitting at a poker table with an older gentleman, and he buys in for $100. It's just a 2-4 limit game. His wife walks him over to the table. He sits down, get all the chips ready, and then his wife leaves and goes over and plays some slot machines. As soon as his wife is out of the room, he orders another $100 worth of chips. He said, this is so if my wife comes back, she sees I have more than I started with, and she'll let me keep playing. I thought that was hilarious.
Best husband story ever.
I mean, what's
a marriage? You can't deceive your wife, right?
Oh, my God. Give me another 100. That's hilarious.
I mean, come on. He's just going the ages-old poker thing. It's just like fishing. Everybody fibs a little in poker when it comes to winning, right?
Yes.
And smart people know how to know the geometric calculations. See, it's not geometry at all, but see. So
see, now you should have done your research before the show and found out what term you meant to use
that's
there.
It. That's the class. That's a class I failed out of. Algebra.
Yeah.
So you do your algebraic calculations. So, you know, the husband comes home and the wife goes, "How'd you do tonight, honey?" And you go, "Oh, broke even." You know, he lost probably 25% of his bankroll. That's probably the general calculation, correct?
Yeah.
You know, hey, I won a little bit. Nope, you broke even. Might even lost a little because you probably tipped the cocktail waitress. I lost a little bit, but it didn't hurt. Means tomorrow, honey, we're putting the house up for sale because we don't have money to make the mortgage. So those are all the calculations that smart, serious poker players know.
Of course, if they pay a wife tax, then they might say I lost when they actually won.
Yeah, well, that's true. But then you have to get the Price Water Horse Coopers involved. And I totally mangled that on purpose to get all the PwC people out there to email me again, like they always do. They're like Apple people, Mac people. If you say anything bad about Mac people, all of a sudden your email box is filled up. You know, when I mangle a price name, it's like I got 27 emails the next day. So this guy was just, he was doing what we all do. He was just fibbing a little bit and, keeping a happy home. There's nothing wrong with that.
It kind of reminds me of that story I wrote about in our publisher's column a few months back about the guy who didn't want his photo taken because he didn't want his wife to know he was playing poker. And there's a woman behind him massaging him. And the guy's like, "Hey, man, that's your wife right there." And he's like, "No, that's my girlfriend." And he was serious. That was just hilarious. Oh, my God. But he, Greg, because he called in, he wins something, doesn't he?
Yeah. We didn't get any legitimate hotline calls this week. So, Greg, guess what? You are the winner of this week's hotline prize. And we're going to send you a lovely T-shirt from PMS Pokerwear, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys at PMSPokerwear.com. And, folks, remember to call 813-448-1120. Lines are always open. Lot of swag just waiting there. I even went over to our little swag pen, took it off the shelf.
Yeah.
And I put it in a pen in the office now. I go over there and pet it every once in a while and ask it how it's doing. And generally the swag is like, I want some. I want a new owner. And I'm like, sorry, swag. People have to call to get it. If they don't call, you're stuck with me. So there's a lot of really sad swag in the Antiup office now, folks. So do your part today.
Oh, my God. Well, right next to that swag bin is the Antiup News Desk. Let's see what's on it today.
The Poker Players Alliance this week released its Congressional Ratings Guide, which gives poker players an easy way to research how supportive their federal representatives are of poker legislation. Check out that guide, Chris, at www.congressionalpoker.org.
Man, I tell you, the PPA just keeps coming up with new and better stuff for us, man. I'm just glad they're around.
Well, certainly, yeah. Any grassroots lobbyist group worth its salt does these congressional guides, and it helps. And, I'm not really a single-issue voter. I don't enjoy tea. Zing! But you know, when you have a tiebreaker here, I mean, it's good to know, you know, obviously the tie is always going to go to the person that's going to help me enjoy the game I like and the business that I've run. So, unfortunately, my congressional race is just a wash anyhow, so it doesn't really matter. But right. But hopefully the rest of you are in competitive districts and, you know, use that guide and learn from it.
40 French land-based casinos came together this week to launch online site 200% Poker. The site is hosted by Prima Networks.
So do I need a bigger screen to play this?
Because it's 200%.
Yeah. I mean, am I only going to see one of my whole cards?
You got to buy one of those extra screens that you could combine them together like the, you know, the internet guys who play 100 tables at once do.
Yeah, I just imagine I'm going to be calling 50, and the site's going to go, no, dude, the bet's 100. I'm like, oh, sorry, I didn't see the other half because your site is 200%.
Oh, man.
But no, seriously, though, this is what I think should happen in the U.S., and I think is slowly happening in the U.S., is the brick-and-mortar rooms coming together like, you know what, hey, we've got an established brand. People like us. They trust us. They come to play in our rooms. So if we create our own online site, we can compete against the big boys, and we don't have to shut them out. Right. Unfortunately, here in the U.S., they're trying to shut them out, which just drives me crazy because I think they've got a strong enough product that they can come together and do quite well. But, you know, this country wasn't based on built on playing nice. It was built on screwing everybody. So,
very nice.
And finally, very, very sad news, Chris. Chip and Karina Jett this week thanked the poker world for their thoughts and prayers, but asked for privacy as they grieve for their son, Apollo, who passed away this week after a drowning accident.
Yeah, you know, I haven't really been able to think about much else other than that. It's just incredibly sad. I sent them a card yesterday, and, you know, we got kind of tight with them, and I feel so bad for them. And I met him, too. I met Apollo when he was, you know, a few years younger, and just an adorable, handsome little boy, and just very, very sad. You know, my heart goes out to them, and I hope they have Godspeed, because that's just tragic, you know. You know, parents should never outlive their children, especially in an accident like that.
Yeah, so everybody, you know, hug your kids and niece and nephews today. Very, very sad.
Okay, so we have a mailbag item. It comes all the way from Canada. Another snowy area that I'm fond of. And it's funny because it's Captain Phil, and you know, isn't like
Captain Phil
is Edmonton like landlocked? What is he captain of? I'm just trying to
figure. That's a good question. Maybe he's
maybe he's captain of the team.
Captain Crunch.
Captain Crunch. That could be it. That could be, or he's just captain of some baseball team or something. I don't know. Or up there, well, he'd be hockey.
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe, that's it. Maybe, yeah, he's captain of the Antiup hockey team.
The curling.
The curling would be even better.
Yes, that'd be awesome.
All right, well, obviously he's involved in sports, Chris, because he wrote in based off of, you remember a couple of weeks ago we did this, we repeated this ESPN top 10 list of worst sports on TV.
Yes.
And some of them were stretching the word sports a little bit too far. And so Captain Phil and a buddy sat down and debated this. And that's what I love about this show, Chris. It brings us together to waste hours of time discussing things that will not change the world at all. You know, it's a badge of honor that we wear for doing this. And he said, after hours of debate, discussion, opinion, he and his buddy came up with an established specific criteria, Chris, for settling anything as a game or a sport. This is groundbreaking stuff, right? Don't laugh. This is groundbreaking.
Well, what's so sad is that he and a buddy sat down for hours and hours to do this.
No, this is important stuff. This is a topic that we've been talking about on the show for 5 years now, and Captain Phil and Buddy Phil, or Captain Buddy here, have solved it for us.
Okay.
We owe them a degree of appreciation that goes long beyond whatever I steal out of the swag bin for them this week. So here's what he says. Under these strenuous criteria, poker is obviously a game, Chris, not a sport.
Okay.
All right, here we go. His criteria are as follows. A sport must fulfill all three One, there must be a reasonable risk of injury.
Hey, if you're playing with Faso, there's a reasonable risk of injury,
see,
right?
Yeah, see, we've already debunked it already, so. Two, the contest must be decided by the players, not someone observing the match like judges. Totally agree. Every time I see gymnastics, and somebody, oh, 9.6. No!
Yeah, exactly. Or cheerleading.
Get to the finish line, and then I'll consider it a sport.
The finish line, okay.
So obviously, poker qualifies here, right? We're two out of three here.
Yep.
I think. And then the third one, players actively participating in the action cannot drink beer while playing.
Boo! Now, well, I do have a question about this one, too, actually. Hold on.
Don't look bad for you, Phil.
Is he saying that it has to be part of the rules that you're not allowed to, or that you physically can't do it while you're playing?
That's
impossible.
I'm going to say it's the players actively participating.
Okay.
So I would think it would be a game or sport where
it's impossible to drink while you're doing
it. The action of consuming a liquid would pose too difficult in the pursuit of the game / sport.
Okay, well then that brings up a question then. Do you and does our captain here think that, I don't know, say marathon running is a sport or a game?
Because
there is reasonable risk of injury running.
Oh, yeah.
You can fall down, pull a hammy, sprain an ankle, whatever, break an ankle. Decided by the players, yes, no one judges who finished first unless it's a photo finish.
Yeah, there's a finish line in marathon.
Yeah, so someone else finishes it for them, so that they fit there. Now, players actively participating cannot drink a beverage because he says you can substitute any beverage besides just beer here. So I would say that pretty much every marathon runner who runs in the marathon runs by somebody with their hand out with the water and grabs the water and drinks it while they're running.
That is
correct. Is that a sport?
You're actually drinking beer, too. So.
Yes. So is it a sport or is it a game? Because they fit the criteria, so...
And the third one,
they debunk.
Hey, I didn't come up with this list. Captain Phil and his buddy did.
Just discussion, that's all. Bringing it up for discussion.
So, marathon runners, sorry. You are playing a game. So think of that when you crowd Boston next April. It's just a game, according to Captain Phil. Now, if you want to get on a train all the way to Edmonton and kick his butt, go ahead. Now, here is, we can debate Captain Phil's list for quite a while, but here is the big hole in the Captain Phil corollary here, Chris.
Yeah.
He says they came up with one exception. You can't have exceptions.
No.
Either it's a rule or it's not a rule.
And we came up with one for him, too, so it's
more
than that.
Exactly. And his exception, Chris, is boxing / MMA. I'm sure sometimes judged. But they said the excessive risk of injury compensates in their opinion.
Oh, yeah. So, okay, so because there's more of one thing, it compensates for the other one that they don't have? That's not right.
So this is what I guess I'm saying is if we change poker's rules to where you get one outed on the river and you get to beat somebody to a bloody pulp, is poker back into a sport then? Because that compensates for the fact that I've drunk enough beer that I feel like beating a guy to a bloody pulp?
That's a great point, Red. That's a great point. So, again, we're back to square one.
Yeah, see, when you open up a loophole, Captain, this is what happens. Little squirmy guys like me are going to squeeze right through it. All right, now he went on to say that they mean no disrespect to any game, except by calling it game. Kind of disrespectful, I think, right?
Right.
And he said, in fact, we both enjoy many games that are not sports, such as golf, poker, curling. See?
Wait. Well, golf isn't a sport because, what, you can drink while you're walking? While you're swinging a club, you can't drink?
There's no reasonable risk of injury in golf, Chris.
Sure there is. Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God. Unless you get hit by a golf cart.
Or a ball or a club. Or you could pull your back. What do you think all these players? Look at Fred Couples. He's had a bad back for 30 years because of golf.
Bad back? Are you serious,
Chris? He could pull your back and be out for months.
Pull a back? Was the charity tournament you went to last week to raise money for those poor golfers who have suffered debilitating back injuries?
Oh, my God. Are you telling me that guys don't pull muscles playing golf?
No, that's not a serious injury.
It says reasonable risk of injury, not serious injury.
All right, well, I'm adding serious because I'm on Captain Phil on this one. Come on. Golf does not qualify.
Oh, my God, golf is such a sport.
But then he went on to say they also enjoy many sports like hockey in all caps.
Yeah, of course.
Get it. You're from Canada, buddy. All right. That's cool.
We get it.
Football and stuff. But however, he says, we do think this criteria make for an easy and clear distinction between games and sports. Sorry, Captain. Back to the drawing board.
Oh, man. That's pretty funny.
Next week. But in the meantime, Captain, we will be sending you a deck of J-Design playing cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com, the official playing cards of Anti-Up, and they are only to be used in playing sports. So, you know, Captain, until you adjust these rules, you're going to have to leave them in the case or take them to your next hockey match. But yes, if anybody else wants to send in a whimsical or not so whimsical comment for a mailbag, email to podcast@andyatmagazine.com, and we'll have fun making fun of you on the show.
Greetings, this is Columbo from pokerwannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another 1 minute mystery. The case of the Aggro Stylist. We are playing in a 12-person home game. We play shorthanded, then to a full table, and now we are down to 5. A few hands ago, with the blinds at 300, 600, 75, and our stack at 15K, we folded 8-8 to a pre-flop under the gun raise of 2K. But now, on the very next hand, the same player makes it 2K again, and this time I have 9-9 on the button. Based on my experience at this final stretch, the blinds are going to fold if I call. I think long and hard about raising, calling, and yeah, even folding. In the end, I decide I'm going to call because I can't fold a middling pair every time somebody in front of me raises. Nevertheless, I have not seen this player come in light, thus I'm reluctant to come over the top, and I'm expecting that he has a hand worth opening with, even if it is the second one in a row.
The pieces don't quite fit together yet.
The blinds indeed fold, and the flop comes down 3 of spades, 4 of diamonds, 5 of diamonds. I'm thinking about this flop and what a good spot this might be for me to shove if he checks. But as I'm thinking, he says, all in.
Well, you knew that was coming, sir.
I stand up from the table and I put my hands on my head like Griffin Dunn at the end of After Hours. He has me covered by about 3K. Call or fold?
Remember, Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited. He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
So, you know, sometimes we adjust to breaking news, right, Scott?
Very often, but sure, I appreciate the thought.
Well, that's our job, you know. If something important happens, we hold the presses as journalists, and we put in that late-breaking story. So, you know, we planned on this week doing a show about, because we were continuing with the survey, and one of the major portions of the survey was how to improve Annie Up. And we were going to do that show this week. But
then we decided you can't improve upon perfection, right?
No. So we're not going to do that show at all. No, of course, we're still doing the show. but we're going to bring that one back next week because I went down to the Vinnie LeCavalier charity event at Derbyland St. Pete on my 40th birthday and just happened to run into a couple of pros there. One was Joe Seebach, and the other one was Annie Duke. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I said, hey, they're there. I need to interview them and talk to them. So this week, I had a pretty good conversation with Annie Duke. So I'm going to play an Annie Duke interview. And there's actually 2 clips. One is the interview with her. And it sort of starts out about, like, why she does charity and being a vegan and all this other stuff. But then it gets into some really good stuff about, you know, the UIGEA and interstate poker legislation and stuff. So I'm going to play that clip. And then at the end, there is another clip that I'm going to play. It's about, you know, some other stuff. So I'm going to have one of those little swooshy noises in between the clips. Ooh. So you know when to recognize it.
Hey, speaking of vegan, you want a quick little joke that one of my vegan friends told me this weekend?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe Andy will appreciate this. Chris, how do you know if someone's a vegan?
How do you know?
Don't worry, they'll tell you.
That's pretty funny, man. And that was one thing she said, too. We're in the VIP party, and they're chatting with Joe Seebach and John Reisner, our November Niner, a good friend from Tampa here. So we're hanging out, and she walks up, and I was like, you know, hey, Annie, you know, I've been waiting to talk to you for a long time, so you got some time for me tonight? And she's like, yeah, just let me go check out the spread over there, you know, I'm kind of hungry. I said, okay, yeah, by all means, you know. So she comes back with nothing. I said, it wasn't to your liking? She goes, oh, man, I tell you, it's hard to be a vegan in the South. I was like, what? So then she starts talking about, you know, some of the places that she stopped along the way and how it's just almost impossible for her to eat. And she has some pretty funny stuff to say about it, actually. So, and after we do our show next week about how to improve Annie Up, I'm going to bring back our interview, my interview with Joe Seebach, too. Talk to him about UB a little bit, and I talked to her a little bit about UB, too. So she said some stuff off the record, too, that was really funny, but I obviously can't say it, but made me laugh.
You're such a tease.
Made me laugh, and this is a good interview. So let's hear my conversation with Annie Duke. Well, first of all, with charity, how important are, and obviously Annie Up for Africa and stuff, how important are charity events to you in your life and events like this?
I play more charity tournaments than I do regular tournaments. I guess that's where my priorities are.
Now, is it just because of your popularity, or is it because it's so important to you and people just demand on your time?
I mean, there's. I hope that it's not just because of my public. I mean, I founded a charity. I'm on the board of. Obviously, I founded Anti-Up for Africa. I'm on the board of Decision Education Foundation. I work really closely with After School All Stars, Alliance for Children's Rights, 1736 Crisis Center. So, you know, and then there's a lot of this comes up where somebody asks me to do something. And I just find it really difficult to say no because, from my perspective, it's like. There's a, you know, poker's a very effective fundraising tool. And, you know, apparently I can bring some publicity or whatever to those events. And, like, I feel like I'd be, like, an asshole if I said no. Like, it's just such an effective way to raise money. And it's so easy. And the only thing that I'm giving up is my time.
Yeah.
You know, so I just feel like, how could I say no? And, so I've ended up doing much more of this than I have actual poker lately. So.
And it's real rewarding, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously that goes without saying, but I don't really think about it as rewarding to me so much as rewarding to the charities, because none of this is about me or, you know.
Right.
Let's go out and do this stuff. So.
Will this be the first time that you're playing poker in Florida?
Yes. I think it's the first time outside of, like, just the Miami airport. This is the first time I've been in Florida since I was 14.
Wow.
Last time I was here, it was my first... We grew up very poor, and it was my first real, like, family vacation at Disney World when I was 14.
It's hard to be a vegetarian in this state. What's the deal?
Not as hard as in Memphis. That's really hard. No, it's just been... I mean, I've been making my way through the menus, but, like, today we ate lunch at a chop house.
Oh, yeah.
So I had to order, like, a regular dish and then ask them to remove the main item in the dish. I'm really spoiled because I live in L.A. And in L.A., basically anywhere you go has not only vegetarian options but also vegan options.
Yeah.
So it's a little tough when you say to people, I don't eat meat, and they're like, but we have fish. And you're like, no, you don't know. No, fish is meat.
Anything with a face.
It's not anything with a face. I actually just don't eat. It's not an ethical issue for me.
Okay.
Somebody said to me the other day, oh, what about the baby cows? And my response was, I'll kill a baby cow. I just won't eat it. It's completely a health choice for me, so I eat basically no animal products at all. So another thing is somebody was like, oh, well, there's some cream cheese filled something over there, and I was like, no, see, it's fried cream cheese. If it's a health choice, then the fried cream cheese thing is also not a good option.
Okay.
But we went to a tapas bar yesterday that actually had a lot of good options called Ceviche.
Cool. Yeah, Ceviche, yep. Yeah,
so that had lots of vegetarian options. So that was actually quite good. But I'm just really spoiled because in L.A., there's first of all, there's vegan restaurants all over the place, which are like amazing food, like gourmet food. But then no matter what menu you go to, either there's vegetarian options all over the menu or the chef will accommodate you because they have to.
Yeah.
You know, because it's such a part of the culture there.
Yeah.
So it's just a little different down here. I'm just I'll get very thin. It's great.
Okay, on the poker, what's it been like being the face of UB with all the things that happened years ago for you?
You know, I mean, obviously, when I found out what had happened, it was the real difficult decision was whether I was going to stay or not. And basically, you know, my decision was based on what I felt like Paul Leggett was going to do. Because, you know, I think that it's really interesting. The big frustration that I have is that here you have this guy, Paul Leggett, who's COO of the company, who truly inherited a problem.
Yeah.
And through that, made sure that almost $23 million got refunded to the customers when, frankly, he could have said, it's not my problem, it's Excapsa's problem.
Right.
And he said, no, these are our customers, refunded this money. Obviously, I know that people are frustrated with how long it took for the list of names to get released, but that was because the investigation had to be done properly. And I, you know, I wish that it could have gone faster, certainly. But the fact is that they did get released. And I feel like, you know, at every turn, Paul Leggett has stood up and tried to do the right thing. And it frustrates me that people give him flack as if he was the perpetrator, as if this happened under his watch or something, and it didn't. So just sort of thinking about that and the way that when he had talked to me about it, how he was going to behave in the face of this, I had a really difficult decision, and I actually talked about it in depth with my brother. And what I said to my brother is, I feel like the easy choice is to leave, clearly.
Right.
And that's going to be the easiest choice for me to make. But when this all happened, I had actually just come from testifying in front of judiciary. And what I had said in front of judiciary was essentially, to paraphrase, obviously cheating is going to happen. It happens in every single financial market. It happens in the stock market. You know, it happens in business. Whatever, cheating is clearly going to happen. But what we want is companies to do the right thing, because online poker is uniquely suited to give reparation for cheating, because you have this huge database and you can actually scrape all the data and make people whole, which in that sense made it better than playing in a brick and mortar casino. Because if you play in a brick and mortar casino and you suspect somebody of cheating, first of all, it's almost impossible to prove.
Right.
And second of all, the casino is not exactly going to hand you your money back.
Right.
Right. But online poker isn't like that. And I said, the majority of companies behave that way. And that was actually a good thing about online poker, to not all put our heads in the sand and say cheating's never going to happen, but to realize that when companies are standing up and doing the right thing and leveraging the transparency of the data in order to make people whole in a real way, that we should be supportive of this industry, and that's why we should support this industry. So now I'm faced with a scandal, and Paul's telling me what he's going to do, that he's going to scrape the database and he's going to leverage the transparency of the database and he's intending to refund everybody and deal with this in a way where you just come out and say this is what happened. And I realized that this is literally just what I had testified in front of Congress about. And my brother, who was really urging me to leave the company, when I explained this to him, he understood. I mean, he felt bad for me because he realized that was going to be a difficult choice in terms of the way that people were going to react to me. But what I said to him was that I felt like if I left, I would be a complete hypocrite. That I would be leaving a brand that was intending to do exactly what I said that brands should do.
Yeah.
And that I really didn't feel like I could do that. And that I understood that this might be really bad for my reputation. But I wanted to know that I wasn't casting aspersions on particularly in Paul Leggett's case, a person that really didn't deserve to have, you know, that happen to them, and that I needed to stand up and say this is the way companies are supposed to behave in the face of this kind of thing. So, you know, I mean, it was definitely a reputational hit, but I tend not to make my decisions about what people think about me. And it's, for me, it's more about what can I live with personally. And I just didn't want to be a hypocrite.
I often wondered, before the scandal, you know, Howard and you were so close. He taught you how to play. You guys are so competitive. How come you didn't just be with Full Tilt to start? What happened there?
Well, because when Full Tilt was starting, I was under contract to UB. And it would have required me to break the contract.
Okay.
And obviously, I could have broken a contract. In retrospect, given the quality of the people I had a contract with, I wish I had.
Yeah.
But at the time, I didn't realize that that was the quality of the people that I had a contract with. So as far as I knew, they were honest people. And I try to honor my obligations. So
okay.
I didn't feel like I could break that contract. And in the end, I don't think it was necessarily a bad choice to say, look, you know, this is an industry as a whole that's probably going to do well, but we don't know how Full Tilt's going to do. We don't know how UB's going to do. So why not just spread it out and not put all the family eggs in one basket?
Okay.
Look, in retrospect, given what happened, would I have gone to Full Tilt when they asked me to? Absolutely.
Okay.
Obviously.
Yeah.
But I thought that I was in a contract with honorable people at the time.
Yeah.
And that was obviously a bad judgment on my part, but it is what it is.
All right, well, we talked about Howard. What's the greatest piece of advice he ever gave you for poker strategy?
Well, I mean, this is going to sound sort of roundabout. I don't know if you're going to think it's to the point, but when I used to moan to him about hands, he was very, very curt with me about it. And what he said to me was, what's the point? What's the point of this story? Why are you telling me this story? Why don't you tell me a story that matters? Why don't you tell me a hand that you won that you played like shit? You know?
Yeah.
Why are you just telling me some story where you got your aces cracked or whatever just because you... Why? What's the point?
Yeah.
And that was probably the best thing he ever did for me, was just to realize, like, there's really no point in telling bad stories. Like, if you read my Twitter stream, I probably have, like, you know, 10,000 tweets. You might find two moans
okay.
in there. Because he really taught me that there's really not a lot of point to it. And a lot of poker players really use Twitter as a device to talk about their bad luck. And I just don't see anything to learn from it. So his point was that think about things that can actually change your game for the better, as opposed to things that are just random occurrences where you're just whining, which was really the best advice he ever gave me.
Is there a point that you two differ on? That sort of like brother-sister kind of just don't agree on when it comes to poker?
We had a big fight this summer about a hand that he got knocked out of a tournament on. In the end, people agreed that I was right, though. But it was a game that he doesn't know. It was like the first time he'd ever played this particular
okay.
game. So.
Okay.
But no, we actually don't really disagree on a lot, because the things that we disagree on tend to be very minor points where, in the end, it's usually that fits his image, like whatever he's doing fits his image well, or whatever I'm doing fits my image well, because in the end, like, I think that our core concepts about poker are relatively identical, but people view him differently than they view me.
Okay.
So you sort of have to express some of those concepts differently. So our games definitely differ, but not because we conceptually differ, but because we're different people.
Okay. Were you approached for the Apprentice runner-up show that's coming up, or whatever that's called, the people who didn't win but came close? That's coming out this season, I think.
Oh, it's some sort of Superstars one.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they know not to call me again, honestly. They
okay.
asked me to come back for the finale last year, and I asked them if they had started a career in comedy. That literally, that was my response.
Oh,
so
my
I don't think they'll be calling me.
Okay. You know, your influence with Congress is just so admirable, and everyone in the poker world totally appreciates it. How do you think the fight is going now?
I think it's going better than it ever has. I'm very optimistic. To give you an idea, 4 years ago, when a similar piece of legislation, you know, was in committee, it got defeated 2-1. 2 years ago, really with Spencer Backus having to leverage a lot of political capital to get it won, it was a tie.
Okay.
And he really burned up a lot of favors in order to get it to just be a tie.
Yeah.
And this time it was 2-1. And I think that one of the reasons why there's been such a shift is that 4 years ago, so much of what was being talked about were moral objections. You know, this is immoral, people are going to bankrupt. You know, I don't know if you remember, but there was that story about what about that kid who went to college and accumulated $3,000 worth of gambling debt
yeah.
and then robbed a bank.
Yeah.
Obviously, that argument is so ridiculous, because in that case, it's completely ridiculous to blame his robbing a bank on playing online poker. His robbing a bank just says that there was something really wrong in that family, because his father knew that he was accumulating this debt as he went along, didn't really do anything about it, certainly couldn't have intervened at some point.
Right.
And then what kind of family, what's going on in a family where a son doesn't feel like he can go to his parents and tell them?
Yeah.
So, what, you know, I had said when they asked me about that, because inevitably in committee they asked me about that a few years ago, I said I would think that that's a symptom of a problem, not the cause. But that was, those were really the kind of objections they had. Like in the first committee that I testified in, they had focus on the family, I think, or it was something like, it was a similar group to that, you know, testifying. Like, really, what do they have to do with this? That's so crazy. And it was really just arguments, I think, about, you know, what constitutes direct harm, and you know, if you're playing poker, can you actually be causing any direct harm to anybody? Is it really immoral? Should we be legislating morals? And so that was really swinging a lot of people, were those kinds of arguments. But those arguments have lost all of their weight, as there's a lot of consumer agencies that are now for this. They say that the best way to protect children is actually to regulate, as opposed to what's going on now, where you can force companies to use best practices through majority verification. So as those kinds of groups get on board and say, no, the best way to protect children and to do the things you're doing and talking about and protect problem gamblers is actually through regulation and not, the moral arguments have really fallen away. So the only opposition that's really left at this point are the people who don't want the competition. You know, and that's not very sympathetic when you're talking about, you know, sort of at the upper end of the estimates is $41 billion in tax revenue in 10 years. That's the upper end of the estimate. But the low end of the estimate is $10 billion in tax revenue. So it's probably somewhere in between. But either way, it's just hard to take such an anti-competitive stance when there's so much benefit to the U.S. that could come.
Right.
So I think that's why it switched to 2-1. So, you know, I think that there's a not surprising scenario where they go off for the elections November 2nd, and then they come back for the lame duck session where they have to pass all the spending bills, and it gets attached to the back of one of those spending bills. And I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. Does that mean that online poker is going to be legal and regulated the next day? No, it's probably going to take 2 to 5 years to figure out some sort of regulatory scheme. But obviously that would be a huge step, because it would make people feel safe at that point. So a lot of the objections that even some of the anti-competitive people have were addressed in the amendments to the bill. Obviously, you have the Sherman Amendment, which basically says you have to certify you've never been offering an illegal game. But, you know, I mean, the anti-competitive stuff I think is so weird to me, because they're like, oh, you're going to take jobs away from Americans. And my response to that is, do you think for a second that a site like UB or Full Tilt or whatever doesn't want to have offices in the U.S.? Like,
exactly.
Obviously, Full Tilt originally and UB originally were both in the U.S. UB was originally in Portland. Full Tilt was originally in L.A. And when they saw that the legislative climate was kind of going against them, they all moved out of the country. These were thriving companies that were paying U.S. taxes that got chased away from the job base and the tax base. So one would assume that, you know, they'll certainly be opening up branches here. And there's actually an amendment that says they have to do that. So, you know, I think that all of that stuff has now fallen away, and we can, you know, sort of be rest assured that jobs will actually be created. But, you know, I don't know. We all have a big problem with the commerce, though. So.
I know. It's ridiculous.
Oh, so they currently back no online poker legislation at all.
I know.
Because, you know, for those who don't know, because there's people aren't really necessarily educated well on what happened with the commerce, they were pushing for a bill in California that would allow intra-state California gaming. So that would mean that you could only gamble with people in California. Now, first of all, that's not even true with the commerce. At the commerce, you can come from Germany and go gamble.
Yeah,
I mean, so so basically that particular form of the bill that they were backing allowed for a hub for licensing. And that hub was the commerce. So it's not that, you know, like Pechanga couldn't get a license or Barona couldn't get a license. It was that if they wanted a license, they would have to get it through the auspices of the commerce.
Right.
So they were backing that bill. Now, the problem with that kind of system is that it's balkanized, meaning that you have little fiefdoms that then have their own little gaming that, you know, where you can only gamble with people within those fiefdoms, right?
Right.
So it might look okay from the standpoint of Californians, because California is a big state, but think about it from the standpoint of someone in Delaware, which is really terrible. Then the other problem is that once you set up state to state, it's very hard for the government to come in and have any kind of consistent regulation across the industry. So you're really talking about each state deciding its own regulatory system, which is bad.
Yeah.
And then, frankly, it's just not as much choice for the consumer. I mean, if the consumer can gamble with people from all over the world, you should really let them. I guess the commerce is forgetting that poker players are their customer base. So anyway, they were backing this. They commissioned a study that said that, and this was to get the Indian gaming interest on board, that in the face of online gaming, that the number of people who go to brick and mortar casinos doesn't change. And this is what really annoyed me. In Congress, they testified that if you allow online gaming, the Indian gaming people would be so destroyed because nobody would go to their casinos anymore. But yet it's by the Innovation Group. You can look it up online. They commissioned a study that showed that that's not true. So I felt that that was very hypocritical.
Yeah.
Okay, so that bill was having trouble. So somebody else in the California legislature introduced a bill for intrastate California gambling that would allow 3 hubs for licensing, with the commerce still being one of them. And they wouldn't back it. They would only back the one where they were
the only one.
Right. So when they offered up 3 hubs, they said no. And now they're opposing the federal level for internet gaming with the licensing scheme in America. So this is an institution that has benefited from online gaming almost more than anyone outside of the World Series of Poker. In like 2000, the LAPC had like 70 players in it. Last year it had almost 800. That's from satellite winners being sent to them and the online gaming industry creating poker players.
Yep.
That then end up at the commerce if they live in California or even if they don't.
Right.
And for them to then now back no online gaming, and not only back no online gaming, but do something so offensive as to use as their comparison for the operators the drug cartels, as if the people operating UB are the Escobars. And, and what I said in front of Congress was these sites are licensed. They just aren't licensed in the U.S., but they are licensed by our allies. They're licensed by the U.K., by France, by Italy, by Gibraltar. These are licensed companies that are behaving in a licensed environment, offering games to the U.S., wanting to be licensed by the U.S. So to compare them to murderers, because literally that's what the Escobars are,
yeah,
is so offensive when they've benefited so much. I see that you're still taking their satellite money from the Escobars. it was just so incredibly offensive. And to say that somehow all the people playing on these sites are participating in some sort of underground, drug cartel-like business, it's offensive to poker players, it's offensive to the operators who are honest business people, who are working in a licensed environment, who have extremely good legal opinions that offering these games in North America is not illegal. And I don't understand why they're taking such an anti-competitive stance and why they think that's good for their long-term business. So it's extremely upsetting to me. Obviously, there's a letter that now has, I think, over 7,000 signatures. The Commerce did respond to that letter, again, reiterating how, we're going to lose all these jobs in America and blah, blah, blah. But literally, every objection that they had was addressed in the amendments. So they're truly just being anti-competitive. There's no logic to it. And I know that a lot of the people who signed that letter are going as far as to boycott the Commerce. I certainly am. Any charity that I'm involved with has been asked to move away from the Commerce by me, because I've said I can't show up otherwise. I think it's really too bad. I think that they could have taken a much friendlier stance and understood that as the ocean rises, all the ships rise as well, and they could have had a nice piece of the pie. And,
yeah.
Yeah. It is what it is.
What is one thing that our readers and our audience would be surprised to know about you?
What would people be surprised to find out about me? I don't know. I mean, I feel like there's a lot of stuff. Like, obviously, because I tweet, everybody knows I'm a crazy Bikram person. Everybody knows that I'm crazy about my food choices. Everybody knows how much I adore my children, that I just want to spend every second with my kids, who are so awesome. Everybody knows about my relationship with Joe. I don't know. I don't feel like there are any surprises to me, you know? Yeah, because of Twitter. I'm kind of a little bit of a reality TV addict, maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
You know what people would be surprised to find out about me? That I cook everything from scratch for my children. I wake up at 6:30 every morning. I cook them breakfast from scratch.
Wow.
And I cook them dinner from scratch every night.
Wow.
That's
okay.
What people would be surprised.
Okay.
Like, we don't have cans of, like, if they want soup, we make it. Everything. So we go to farmers markets every week. We get all of our ingredients.
No instant potatoes in the house.
No, like the other morning I made homemade potato latkes for the kids. I grated the potatoes up and everything.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so everything in our house is homemade.
That was my last question too, by the way. So, although I didn't want to ask you about if that's ever going to end between you and Dan and Negrano.
But, okay, you need to not say between.
Okay, yeah.
Because that's the thing that tilts me the most.
Okay.
No, it really
is he
does.
Ever going to stop? How's that?
Because all I want to say is you go search any blog or any interview that I've ever given and you find a single bad word that I've ever said about him.
Okay.
Good luck.
Okay.
This is Daniel Negrano of FullContactPoker.com. You're listening to Ante Up.
Once again, Chris, bring a hand of the week up from a swagless person.
Oh,
I guess swagful is probably.
He's swagful. If he's swagless, right. We'd be sending him something.
Right, that's true, yeah. So he's full of swag, so no swag for him. But we appreciate the fact that he keeps sending us stuff because we need hands of the week. And this is a pretty good one to talk about. Comes from our good friend Matt Moody. And he's playing in a local cash game. It's a $1, $2 no-limit hold'em.
Okay.
All right, kind of your bread and butter there, right?
Yeah, sort of.
Or your bread or your butter.
it's what I eat.
yeah, exactly. And he's starting the hand with a squiggly $80 and seven other players at the table. So eight-handed, so not quite a full table, but pretty close.
Right.
His stack has gone up and down all night. All of ours have, Matt. And he finally looks down at the monster that is five of clubs, six of clubs. And he is in the small blind, and three players limp to us, Chris.
Okay. I guess I'd limp. I'm not going to raise out of position with connectors because I'm out of position, so I guess I'd limp along, right?
Yeah, well, you know, hey, it's a buck, right? You know, yeah. You get lucky, and if not, this is what I like about the small blind is a lot of people will say, oh, it's just a buck. And it is in this case. So I try not to stretch my range too much, you know. Seven deuce. Ah, it's only a buck. Maybe I'll flop three sevens. No, you're not. You're just going to lose a lot of bucks. But, you know, a suited connector, you know, that's going to be one I'm going to take the dollar flyer on.
Exactly.
So many limpers, right?
This is the kind of hand that can make a really big hand, especially in a multi-way pot. Just don't go broke in a multi-way pot that's unraised, that's all.
Yeah, and the fact that I'm in the small blind, too, I know I have to hit this flop hard or I'm getting out.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna play this draw all the way to the end.
Yeah.
You know, if I nail it hard, great. If not, boom, there's going to be another hand coming right behind it. All right, so he does limp in, and we have $8 in the pot, so four total to the flop of king of clubs, four of clubs, seven of diamonds, and boy. See, I just got done saying I want to hit this flop hard. Not going to play my draws all the way to the end. And now I flop two draws with it, Chris.
Oh, my God. That's crazy. That is a huge flop.
Open-ended, straight draw, flush draw. Of course, our flush is 6-high, so we don't get too excited about it. But it's there.
Yeah.
Play through the connectors, right?
Oh, my God. That's huge.
And we are first to act with you know, three other opponents in this hand.
Man. All right. So we're first to act. There's eight in the pot. I'm happy betting, geez, 6 to 8 here, maybe even more, just to make it look like maybe I'm afraid of the draw that I'm on. But wow, that's a huge flop for us. So I don't know, I'd bet pot maybe. Just what the hell, you know? I'm happy taking it down right here, moving on. Just because I have a great draw doesn't mean that I need to milk this hand forever either. So
here's the thing. I think we go two different ways here. So if we go your way, Chris, this is what I'm worried about. We're taking the lead, which good poker players do. They take the lead in the hand, right?
Yeah.
So I could defend that. We have a lot of draws, too, so we can hit a lot of stuff to continue. But what happens if we miss our draw on the turn? Do you slow down then, or do you keep the pressure on? If you keep the pressure on, you're doing exactly what we said we didn't want to do when we got into this hand, right?
Yeah. It's a hand that I know you're probably going to say check raise and take it down, but I think check raise a lot of times with these kind of boards are pretty transparent. So
yeah, I
just
don't like check raise here.
Okay, so I'm glad you didn't say that. So I don't know. I still think I bet, and then if I can fire again on the turn, if it's a blank, anybody who's just calling, you know, unless they have an absolute monster, would raise me, I think, if they had, like, ace-king and they want to protect their hand or, you know, on the flop. So if they didn't raise me, they just called, I would put them on the draw. If the draw misses on the turn, I might bet again. I know I don't want to, but and I'm out of position, but, you know, that's such a big draw for me, and I've already represented strength that to not bet the turn just opens it up for them to steal it on me. So
right. Yeah, I mean, I guess the flip side is just to check without the intention of check raising and see if I can get a free card here, or somebody will put out a smaller bet that I feel comfortable calling and then reassessing on the turn.
Yeah.
And I give that a little bit more credence here because everybody limped pre-flop.
Yeah.
So I think the king is a little less likely, though, you know, a weak king could be in play here. So I don't really think anybody hit this flop, I guess is what I'm saying. And if I check, I think there's probably a higher degree of possibility that it's going to get checked around, maybe, or maybe a weak bet on the button or the last to act that I can call comfortably. I guess what I don't want to do is bet out here and then get raised and then get sucked in for more money.
Yeah.
But, you know, I get this big draw. I don't know. It's such a conundrum. I don't know what to do.
Oh, man. Well, I like the bet out just because I don't mind taking it down here. Because, like you said, they all limped and they don't have great hands. So the only hand that calls me if I bet out here, to be honest, is a baby set or a baby suited ace that's got the nut draw on me and I'm screwed. And I'm hoping I hit the straight. And then maybe.
You think a baby set's going to call you and not raise you?
I don't know. You know, it's a local cash game, 1-2, no limit. It could be all kinds of players out there. They could call. You know.
I would think a set would probably raise me. I guess that's more of a reason to bet. I guess my problem with betting here, I guess you're talking about a pot size bet, so like $8, right?
Yeah.
So that should be enough to get the flush draws out. But, you know, a 1-2 no limit cash game, how many times have you seen people overpay for the flush draws?
Well, I tell you what, if I'm getting 2-1 on my money with the nuts here, and then my implied odds are that this guy might have the same flush draw as me, and I have like ace 10 clubs or something. Or not that good because he probably would have raised, but maybe ace 8 of clubs or something.
Right.
I'm going to call $8 with a nut flush draw and an ace in my hand.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I guess that's what I'm saying. So
yeah.
We bet out, that person legitimately in this type of game would probably call, right?
Yeah.
And then a club comes on the turn, which is one of the outs that we're hoping for.
Right.
Now that turns into a bad out, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And then on
and
top of it.
Now we're forced to continue to bet out again because our line of thinking is, hey, we missed the draw, even though we hit it. But now this guy's got it bigger, and now we're going to get sucked in for more.
Yeah. Geez. You know, that's the other thing, too, is you have to know whether or not or feel whether or not your club draw is the best club draw. And if it's not, then maybe, you know, if you get called on your bet on the – because I still am betting out here. I can't not bet this hand. It's just – it's so big.
I think you've talked me into betting out. Yeah.
So if I bet and then I get a call, then like I said earlier, I think I said this earlier, that – I'm only getting called by the nut flush draw, a small set, you know, to try to disguise it, and you thought they might raise. So if I'm getting called, then maybe it's someone with, like, King Jack, you know, or King 10 or something. So
that's what I was.
Yeah, it's either a pair of kings with a – if they call me. We don't even know what's going to happen yet. We haven't even said it yet. But if I bet and someone calls me, it's a pair of kings with a bad kicker or a bigger flush draw than mine, so I'm a little nervous by calls here.
Yep.
So.
Yep, I actually agree. All right, cool. All right, well, you talked me into betting it out, and I think we're on the same path here. So
excellent.
Let's see whether he ruins the entire hand here by doing something different. All right, so he says this flop gives him a ton of outs, and he says an experience will probably cost me some money as I won't be folding on the flop. Yeah, I agree with that. You can't really fold this flop,
I don't think.
I guess somebody pushes all in, maybe not. But he says, since I don't want to create a large pot on the flop with two very aggressive players behind me, that's interesting. We're finding that players behind him are aggressive.
Yeah, they never told us that.
He decides to check. So now none of these players are very aggressive. Not just aggressive, very aggressive, Chris.
Okay.
Does that change your desire to bet out?
Maybe. If I know that they're going to bet and I can raise them. I mean, again, though, a lot of times these two suited boards are, you know, boards where you can have a straight draw, these check raises almost always are a draw. You know, I mean, I can't imagine a guy check raising a set. Like, you know, I could see him calling a set or raising, but check raising a set, I don't see that happening here with the two clubs and the straight draw. So to me, if I check to them and then they do bet, and then if I'm just going to call, that's kind of weak. So I would probably raise there. So maybe I would. I don't know. If they're real aggressive, I might bet and then see if they raise me, and then I can get it all in. I really have no problem getting it all in here. If I'm behind the suited ace, I still have my straight outs that aren't clubs. And if they have a suited ace, they may not have a pair, so I could still hit my five or six too. So
that's true too.
I really am not afraid to get it all in if I have squiggly $80 to start this hand. So
yeah, this is the type of hand I kind of like with aggressive players. It's because I got a lot of these outs,
yeah.
So I could put them to a test and know that I'm comfortable putting my stack in, like you said.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I have a lot of outs. So yeah, you know, I guess this doesn't really change. I'm going to bet here, and if I get raised, you know. We'll see what the turn of river bring us.
Okay, so he checks, and there are aggressive guys behind him, right? Is that what you said?
Yeah, so the big blind bets $9. They get one fold, the button calls, and it gets back to us.
Hmm. Well, I would have bet 9 myself or 8 myself, so... Right. But again, I think calling is so weak, and we got another guy in the hand calling. I feel like there's dead money in there somewhere. I don't know. I mean, you want to keep the pot at a size where you want to keep enough money in there and string them along. So if you make your hand, you know, you're getting the pot odds to call 35. To, how much is the pot? 30?
35 we call.
Oh, if we call, it's 30. Let me see.
I think. Well, it says total pot 35.
So it's 35. So, yeah, that's what I was saying, 35. So if we call, we're getting 4-1 on our money here on a call. A call is obviously mathematically correct, but I have no problem raising to, like, 30 here. And then if they – and I'm telling them by raising 30 that I have only about 48 left. So, you know, I'm going the whole way with it. So maybe they'll lay it down. Right. So I'm going to raise. I'm going to raise – let's see, 1-9, another call. I'm going to make it like 35 to go. I'm going to bet the pot if I play it his way.
All right. I like that. I actually do. I like that.
Cool.
Hmm.
I can see you doing that in the home game.
In the home game, yes. All right, well, he doesn't say what he does, but I'm assuming since the hand continues on that he calls.
Okay.
And the turn is the six of hearts, so our board now is king of clubs, four of clubs, seven of diamonds, six of hearts. So we pair our six, still got our straight draw, still got our flush draw.
And a pair. So let's see. We still have... We have more outs now, actually, because I think another six or a five might win the hand for us. So I'm happy with this hand. Of course, it's hard because we keep track of both ways I would have played it. Had I been playing it, I would have bet out on the flop. And then had I been playing it his way, I still would have raised. So I still have a ton of money left here now because I guess he just called at 9. So that's he still has like 78, 77 bucks left. So... again, now the pot's going to be, I guess, with 9 more, it was 44. So I got no problem betting like 30 or 35 here.
He's really at 63 here, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
It's 17, so squiggly 80. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, let's see. He came in for a dollar more, made it 79, then he bet 9. So he had 70 bucks left. So, yeah, I have no problem with
betting. Oh, that's right. Yeah, that was left. Right. Yeah, you're correct. Yeah, all right.
We'll see. There's about 44 in the pot. So I think I'm betting like 25 here at 30. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, we did pick up more outs here. I don't think the six is going to help anybody. Maybe the big blind, but he would have to have a weird combination like we did too, and he would have to bet the draw with a worse draw than we had. Yeah, the six is good for us. So yeah, absolutely.
All right, cool. Let's bet and let's see what he did.
All right. So our hero says this card isn't amazing for me, but I do feel if I hit a five on the river, I will be good. He checks again, trying to keep the pot small until the river.
Man, I don't know.
I do think we're giving up value here, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, we're being so passive, and we played this hand to hit a flop like this, and now we've improved with a pair too.
Well, I'll tell you this: I bet often on the come, and then people at the end of the hand when I hit it, which normally I do, will go, bet on the come, didn't you?
Yeah.
So apparently that's not a good thing to do, at least in most of my opponent's mind. But I like to do it because when I hit it, they don't give me credit for it.
It's such a strong hand. And the other thing, if you play it passively, if you do hit your club on the river, are you going to get paid off? And if you do get paid off, it's going to be get paid off by a bigger flush than yours because nobody's out there with, what, the deuce three of clubs. So,
yeah.
You know, so if you make your club, and you played it passively, check calling, then it looks like you've made your flush. You're not going to get any money anyway. Get it in now while you can and hit your hand or take it down. That gives you so many different ways to win the hand, betting it and winning it there, or betting it and making your hand and winning it there. So I just can't be passive here.
Well, I think you make a good point. Yeah, what happens if this club comes? You bet out, everybody's going to fold like a cheap suit, right?
Right. Because or you're going to get raised by a better
course,
hand.
It got there. Right, or raised by a bigger flush. Or you just check, hoping somebody else puts a bet in, and that'll be your value bet, which is probably what you'd have to do at that point.
Yeah.
It's probably your best shot at getting some money out of the hand at that point, and neither one of those are good.
I mean, look at it this way. Let's say we're playing at his hand, so there's 40 in the pot. He checks, and they check. Okay, and then you get your club, and then you bet, and they all fold. Okay, well, now you've won a $40 pot, but had you bet and got a caller, then you would have won a much bigger pot if you make your hand. And if you don't get a caller, you win in the same money anyway. So I just can't – I can't check here. And I don't know what happens, but I can't check here.
All right. Well, he does check. Everybody else checks behind, Chris.
I just said that. See that? So if you check and they check, they're all getting their free cards. Your sixes might be good here. You know?
Might be good.
And now, if you hit your flush and bet, and they don't have a better flush, or they don't have a flush at all, they all have to fold to you, and you've made the same money. Whereas if you bet a little bit or half the pot, you might get more money for this on the river. I just, oh man, they all check behind. That's just a sick feeling.
Yeah, it's crazy. All right, well, the river comes the jack of clubs. So our final board is king of clubs, four of clubs, seven of diamonds, six of hearts, jack of clubs. Our flush gets there, Chris, and we're not really happy, are we?
No, only because of the way he played it.
Yep, yeah.
I would have gotten a lot more information, I think, on my hand.
And the way that everybody else played it, too. I mean, we could be up against three flushes now, right?
And it's funny you say that, because that's how I got knocked out of that charity tournament. I had two clubs in my hand, and I had like two big blinds left, or four big blinds left. And it came two clubs. I was in the big blind, and it came two clubs. I shoved, got two callers. The turn was a club. I made my flush. I'm like, ooh, I'm tripling up. One guy turned over jack 10 of clubs. The other guy turned over ace 5 of clubs, and I had like 6-7 of clubs. We all made flushes on clubs. It's so funny you say that. So you're right. There could be two other guys with clubs here, the way it's played.
Everybody's playing it like a flush draw, I think.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Yeah, so that jack of clubs now I'm wishing was like a 5 of diamonds or something, so I would have made two pair instead.
Yeah.
Or straight.
Yeah. This is what I love about poker is you don't always want to prove to the best hand that you can.
Yeah.
You want to prove to the hand that's just good enough to win the pot.
Exactly.
Because sometimes a better hand is a losing hand.
That's right. I'm rooting for the three of hearts there on the river now, not the jack of clubs. Oh, man. Yeah, no, I'm just sick.
I really did not want to see a club here. Now I'm fine seeing a club if I can check this, if it checks around again and I happen to win because everybody else was playing some kind of weird stuff. Or somebody puts on a weak bet, I'll pay them off, but I don't want to get into a big pot now.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to either check or make one of those really small bets that looks like I don't have a hand. And if somebody really raises me, well, I guess I don't want to do that either because they could just take it from me. But I think I'm checking. I think I'm checking and hoping somebody bets and I just call.
Right. All right, well, our hero said at first, I think, bingo, bango, bongo.
Yeah, that's my line. Yeah, I stole that line.
Stole that, yeah. But then he realizes he has a 6-high flush. Very good. Pat yourself on the back. He says he again checks, looking to check raise. Ooh,
Not that. No.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. Don't want to do that.
Well, I thought he said when he realized he had a 6-high flush that was a bad thing, not a good thing. Yeah. He's looking to check raise with that? That's not good.
Yeah. Now he says check raise. He thinks the big
The boo. The boo rivage.
Because he's 100% sure the big sure boy picked the wrong week to quit drinking. Because he's 100% sure that the big blind is going to bet, Chris.
Yeah, but you still have another player in the hand, and even if he is going to bet, I'm not raising him. I mean, he may have a flush.
Yeah, not good. All right, so the big blind bets out $20, and our hero thinks he's good and ready to check raise him all in for another squiggly $50 when the button goes all in for $87.
Oh, man.
All right, raise your hand if you're surprised.
Yeah.
Right? And he goes on and says that this player loves, and I mean loves, to play any and all flush draws.
Oh, well, there
I
you go.
I've seen him call preflop raises with 2-5 and 10-2 just because the hand was suited. Yeah, we all know those people.
Yeah. There's only one flush draw that's worse than ours, so.
Yeah.
If that's the case, I'm out. You know, and I'm glad I played it passively because I only lost, $10, really, because the $1 is already in. So
right.
I'm glad I just lost 10 bucks on this hand and didn't get felted, so I'm folding.
All right, our hero says as he plays the hand back in his head, I come to the maddening conclusion that my flush isn't good. That's all right, Matt. We were there a little bit before you, but hey, you're going to get there. And this player must have the bigger flush. We fold. Another player folds.
Good. Good. He folded. That's good.
Yeah,
it's almost always if they get felted and say, where did I go wrong? At least he folded.
At least he folded, right?
That's good.
And the button turns over. Ace of clubs.
Yes.
Ace of clubs.
Yes. Good fold. Good fold. Yeah, I'm glad he folded. I mean, he would have gotten his information a lot earlier from a nut draw, I think, if he had raised or bet somewhere along the way. So, he would have lost more money that way. So, hey, what do we know? He lost minimum.
It does depend. If this guy really does love his flush draws, then we're not going to be able to bet him off of it.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And now, that doesn't change the fact that we shouldn't have because, I mean, this is what's interesting about our hand is our hand is much more powerful than his.
Yeah.
Because he had the straight draw, too. I mean, we're not, you know, knowing what his flush draw, obviously now that we know we had to hit our straight to win.
Yeah.
Actually, we didn't need to hit that.
No, that's the thing I was saying before. Our sixes were good.
Right?
If we bet on the flop, the turn, maybe he folds. But yeah, our sixes were good at that point.
All right. So he says, after going through his hand in my head, he thinks his huge mistake is not shoving the turn, Chris.
Well, I did talk about betting 25-35 there. If the guy wouldn't fold for 35, I don't know if he'd fold for 70. But yeah, I mean, that is a mistake the way you see it if you think he would fold for 70. But, you know, I think the initial mistake is the flop bet, you know, not betting the flop.
Take control of it there. And
then shoving on the turn.
Yeah, yeah. Our ace-3 guy is probably not going anywhere on the flop, but yeah. But then you come back on the turn with a bigger bet. Now he's really got to think, right?
Right. Which is what we were talking about earlier. You were worried about betting
the turn.
This is
what we're saying we were not going to do at the beginning of the hand.
Yeah. And then
folks, that's why you turn in the ante up. You get one piece of advice at the beginning of the hand, and then you get a completely contradictory opinion at the end of the hand. So, you know, you get all the ways to play it.
There used to be a time where I would edit out all these things. Not anymore. I just leave them in the show. It's better podcasting, I think.
All right, now here's the thing, Chris. He wanted to know whether he should shove on the turn. Because he thought maybe the big blind would at least call or maybe raise, which could get the button out. As it turns out, the big blind he folded showed 10 of clubs, 10 of spades.
Oh, I think a shove on a turn gets the 10-10 out. I mean, what can he beat but a bluff there?
Yeah, but what he's saying is he thinks that the 10s were going to raise to get the flush draw out. Now, I guess you know your players better than we do, but that king on the board, I think, would slow down the 10s, right? I mean, he put out a pretty big bet on the flop just to find out where he was.
Yeah, I think if I bet, if I shove on the turn, the 10s fold.
Yeah,
the 10s aren't going to re-raise or call me. There's a king on the board and a straight on the board on the turn.
Right.
You know, I mean, you could have 5-8, you could have anything, you could have a set. I think the 10s lay it down on the turn. They don't re-raise or call. So, no, I don't think that at all. I think the 10s get out of the way, and then you're stuck with the other guy. And I don't think the other guy can call at 70 bucks on the turn with just a nut flush draw and one card to come. I think he does lay it down for 70 bucks if that's what your play was. If it was our play, he may not, because the way we played it earlier might be a bigger pot, and you might have less money to shove with. So there's a lot of ways to go with this hand, but I really don't think the 10s call or re-raise if you played it the way you played it and then shove on the turn. That's just not happening.
Yeah, I mean, really, the only thing I think of to get the ace tray out is, like we said, is a decent sized bet on the flop, and then a shove on the turn. Now, of course, that's results oriented.
Yes, exactly. You know, you have to put them on those exact two cards to do that.
Right.
So this is a tough game, poker, man. Tough game.
All right, Matt. Well, we appreciate you sending it in, and of course, you do not qualify for swag. But had somebody else sent the hand of the weekend this week, Chris, would have won a free download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from Element 26 NEOPoker.net. That's good stuff, man. It's going unused this week. So, folks, send those hands to podcast@neopmagazine.com, and you could take something home for dinner.
Well, I'd like to thank Annie Duke for talking to me at Derby Lane. I learned a lot. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.